You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Tonight, my guests are Andrew Bartzis and Grace Francesca Oldani. Andrew is a galactic historian, a Reiki master, shamanic healer, and psychic reader. He hosts several radio shows, the main show being Walking in Energy. You can find out more about Andrew at www.andrewbartzis.com. Grace Francesca Oldani is trained as a shamanic healer by the 13 Grandmothers on an indigenous sacred space. After a near-death experience in 2012 and several strokes which followed, she began to weave medicine baskets in a tent in the woods nurtured by nature's healing touch. You can find out more about her at www.medicinebaskets.com. The links and bios will remain up at BBS on my show bio from tonight for those who are interested. About 2 weeks ago, I had the good fortune to spend time with both of them at the conference at Mount Shasta. Today, they're with us live from Nia Bay, so let's welcome to the show now. Hi, Andrew and Grace.
Hey, Lance, how you doing?
Hello, Lance.
Hi, hi. Well, I'm guessing that a lot has happened since I last saw you both, and I thought I'd start out by asking you, Grace, what it was like to have a near-death experience in 2012 when things were really hopping.
Yeah, I got boinged right off the planet. Let's see. First of all, thank you, Lance. What a treat to meet you. And dying in 2012... It's been fabulous. I suggest dying to everyone.
Right.
You know, I wasn't really aware of the timing. I knew there's a Hopi poem or prayer that talks about the river moving quickly and it's time to let go of the bank. And and get in the middle of the river and look around and see who you're there with. And that's certainly, you know, I felt the quickening in my own life and in my clients' and students' life. And it got really quick for me on June 11th when I died of a heart attack and came back. So I'm going to speed up a lot because part of that quickening is that it was very clear to me that it was time to, you know, the premonitions, the visions, what I knew. And one of the beautiful things about dying was I lost whatever I thought I had left. And so I came back without an identity. I came back without a history. I came back without a story, and I came back untangling and reweaving, and I got in the river. I had to get in the river. I had to let go and get in the river. So, meeting Andrew in Shasta. I mean, I've been wandering around. I've been living out of my car and. Being supported and cared for by my incredible Facebook family and fans and friends and very dear and generous people who have contributed to my well-being and travels in the last year and a half. And so it became important to just go where I'm called. And meeting Andrew in Shasta was... Okay. Andrew's got an echo. He's going to the other room.
Okay, right.
So meeting Andrew in Shasta was, part of one one Facebook friend who I hadn't met but had Skype conversations with over a year saying, you know, I'm supposed to be there, and I knew I was supposed to be there. So, and before we get further, so I want to give you a little bit about my history, my background. It wasn't the 30 years. I had the good fortune of being helped and studied with, or actually sat at the feet of an Apache medicine woman for about 12 years, and did some training with some Cherokee, and it's kind of, even though I'm Italian, I'm an Arapaho. I definitely have native in my blood, but so I'm going to ask Andrew to step in here.
Okay.
Okay. I'm here now. I just had to figure out how to unmute this phone.
Okay. Okay, good. Well, I'm glad you're unmuted.
Yeah. So I drifted into Andrew's path, and there we were.
Two ships and here we are. Night on the mountain.
And that's where we all met on the mountain.
That's right. We all met on the mountain at 7,000 feet at Bunny Flats.
That's right. That's right. I remember the day. Well, I was there probably.
Because I had to...
Go ahead.
Well, I was joking because when I got up there, I had to call him to ask him where he was, and then I thought, how many psychics does it take to find a group of psychics?
A lot.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, Andrew, what was your experience of being up there at Bunny Flat?
For me, it was a very, very powerful experience. I experienced all sorts of really personal dreams, as well as the dreams of the people that were coming there, the people that intended to come there, and my original purpose of going to the mountain, which was to begin a opportunity to reconnect people to their heart energies, and then from their heart energies to share the healing type of knowledge that I've learned, and then to share the knowledge that I've learned becoming a galactic historian, and all the respect and honor that entails for me on that personal process and that personal journey, and to see the response not only from the internet, the emails, but the physical people that showed up for healing. Now, we had a mother and a father show up with a 4-year-old kid who had brain cancer and 3 months left to live. People from all walks of life, from all directions, all angles, all historical backgrounds, genetic backgrounds. Now, for those that regularly listen to me, when I meet a person, I they're down their Akashic records, it's transparent to me. It's just a matter of me taking the opportunity to understand it and read about it within the records. And to see the assemblage of people and powerful and old souls that have come back together to reconnect to the ancestral level and the soul family level that we all represented is very impressive. And then to share the soul codes that I've learned over the last few hundred years.
Well, yes. You know, the family that had the little boy was a particularly poignant experience, and there was a funny element to that. When he was healed, when he received healing, didn't he say something about his parents?
Yes, it's time for them to heal first.
Yeah, right. That was a really heart-moving story, and it was. There were many. I mean, you know, you did readings that were, you know, you couldn't hold. Your eyes couldn't remain dry if you had a heart in you. And healings that were so powerful, it was an amazing experience. And then we had the opportunity to do some of the first videos of the galactic history. So that was an amazing experience for me, and quite an honor as well. So, and I felt like I'm still in that energy kind of after getting back.
Well, it
does kind of change you, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Andrew?
Many hours of no time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, I like
it.
Go ahead.
Well, that no time, I mean, that's kind of how I've, that's how I've lived since. I've been a pretty free spirit, but after I died, that no time is, I mean, every moment is no time, and, you know, I certainly haven't had a job. I don't know what day it is, you know, and so to live in no time and to meet people who Andrew is a, you know, he has his practice and his healing, and I had mine, and I really, in the, with the support of the family, the soul family that came together, with the support of that, I was able to bring my new gifts, kind of untangle the old ones and bring the new gifts and really start to work again. Obviously, I've been called back into the, called off the bench, and it's, and to have the privilege to, you know, meet with Andrew and the two of us working together is a really, it's powerful stuff.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. You know, I was able to watch you both working together when the group came up to my house here a few days later. And the healing that you did on the two people that were here was absolutely incredible. And I just wanted to say that both parties have been experiencing some major positive shifts. So I just wanted to give you that feedback. It was quite an empowering experience, and I wanted to thank you for that.
Well, thank you for calling them in and bringing them, and that's one of the things I'm excited about. Working with Andrew is, you know, when somebody's got a couple of things. Somebody's got your back, psychically and energetically,
right, right.
And then also we bring, you know, we each have different skills and gifts, and to bring them together, and then the masculine and the feminine, and it's just a powerhouse.
Yes, and there's a lot going on right now. Andrew, maybe you could briefly tell us about the energies and the psychic elements that are out there. I've been talking to my friends, and there are quite a few people who have been sharing stories about very dark attacks and souls that are trapped and all kinds of things, especially in Bali. And also about telos. You were at a particular place at Mount Shasta for a reason, right?
Correct. To adjust the dark entity attacks, I warn people about the 21st. The window of the 21st to the 14th is the volume of psychic attacks has been turned to the maximum level, and it won't be turned down until after the 14th of July. So all those people that are experiencing that, this is your system of domination and control in action, exercising its authority over you. And until people start standing in their sovereign entities and their sovereign lights and with their ancestors, understanding that the ancestors bring you their power and their wisdom from their time and domination and control and bring it in unity mind to you, it's up to you to use unity mind to understand why the system still has parts of your sovereignty and is able to do a series of extended attacks on a worldwide basis. As for my experience in Telos, I was asked to come to the mountain and read the entire 52-million-year timeline war. I successfully did that, and then when I was done, I was offered a series of other contracts with other sacred places to read specific recordings of history from the Akashic Records, so that those sacred places are the protectors as well as the energy systems that determine the level of energy or low-energy people that come to the reading of the record, because there are certain people that were soul-bound to those parts of records and will be there to be their witness to the sacred neutral reading of those moments at those places, because it's been bound in history as that they would.
So are there more spots that you're going to be visiting in the physical reality?
Well, I'll be going back to Mount Shasta, and this will be relatively soon. Actually, it'll be within a couple months. I'll be announcing it on my website and my radio shows when the actual new event is. It's going to be like a psychic camp healing class where you learn all the subtle energy classes, the subtle energy techniques, what it takes to be someone that's aware of their own surroundings.
Yes, that's very important, very important. And raising awareness to be present and mindful, because I certainly, in the last couple of weeks, have, become quite aware of all the things, not all the things, but some of the things that are possible. And that included something that was quite unexpected when I was trying to open a package and stabbed my finger with a paring knife to the bone. So that was kind of a shock. Yes, and then later I got the information that it had something to do with reawakening the memory in the bone and going through the cellular memory of the skin. So I'm not quite sure what that's about, but it's all fine. I healed it. So.
Okay.
I dealt with an infiltrator entities, a whole group of them this morning that came in, and actually they'd been waiting for lifetimes for someone like me that didn't flinch and knew how to, they've been coming through for lifetimes, and I took a hit and worked with it, and a portal opened, and we crossed. I had a couple of assistants I sent a lot of people, a lot of entities, a lot of beings home that had been
running for
lifetimes.
Well, I kind of have a question about, for you, Andrew, about the near-death experience, because as I understand it, the incarnational process the graduation process has been on hold for quite a long time. And so when people have a near-death experience, where are they going? Because they're not going to graduate at this time. Where do they go, and how does that reincarnational process work, and why?
There's a series of astral cities that have specialized rooms called regeneration chambers. So when you pass on, you go into the outer edges of the astral world, and there are other entities that are out there scanning the astral realm for a sentience that's passing over, and then there are negative and neutral and weirdo entities out there that are also doing the same thing. If you're lucky, you get caught by the positive energies and get a quick life review before you get a smack in the ass and you're sent back to the world in the reincarnation process. If you get caught by something else, they can insert fine print in your contracts before your essential fuse is run out, before you come back to a spiritual cord of equity, and it determines if you're back in a reincarnation cycle, if you're in an incarnation cycle. And if you have friends on the outside that have been waiting for you to pass over, they're able to hold space in the cord of equity and remove any negative entities that are trying to re-influence you into an incarnation cycle.
There's quite a backlog, isn't there, of souls waiting for us to graduate?
Giant backlog.
What is the status of that particular event, our graduation, and how does that tie into what you and there's actually one other person who's been talking about the event?
How does it tie in? Well, our sovereignty, our understanding of our free will, our expression, our healing natures, is really what determines how the event moves forward and what momentum it keeps. That's vital to understand. You know, when it comes to me or Grace individually, we're here in our power, literally in our power, in no time, creating a standing wave of energy that's saying we are healers and we are operating, within a sacred neutral healing perspective, or in, to the left or right of it, depending on the situation that's in front of us. We're not reacting people. We are kindness, impeccability beings that use our impeccability, our standards, our wisdom to bring as much knowledge and wisdom and sovereignty to those people that are there so they can heal themselves. And if they're unable, we step into that position as the healer and empower them with a level of healing and freedom so that once again that they may understand their path.
Well, I've seen it in action, and it's quite an amazing process. Many different healers have different techniques. I know that you are a master Reiki practitioner, but how does the healing process work for you both? I mean, how do you do it? Where obviously the person is healing themselves, so you're empowering that. Some of the healers I know actually involve their own energy with the client? How do you guys do it?
I don't use my own energy.
Right.
I actually think that's improper unless it's an extreme circumstance, because all the energy is there available to heal anyone, especially when you're functioning in no time with spirit guides. And I know Grace has a very similar view on that. You know, you use your energy to protect yourself, to hold space, to make sure that there's a circle of trust and you're able to communicate psychically with the person and keep their egg, their nurturing egg of healing, you know, in the nurturing field of energy.
Before I died, I used to do a lot of empathic healing. Sometimes I would take things on from others and move it through me. I've done my own healing in different ways, but I came through with, I mean, I've healed myself, not healed myself. I've asked for healing by my spirit guides and helpers. I mean, if I'd listened to the doctors, I'd have died of cancer, been blind, and I mean, I'd have been dead several times. So, it's not me. My job is to, I just work here.
Right.
So my job is to call in the my person's soul guides and guides, check to make sure there aren't any imposters or sneakers in, get my soul guides, ask them to join in council, and then I'm the facilitator, or I'm the translator. And one of the gifts I have is to translate, find the language as the person speaks. So I just work here. You know, I'm kind of like the checkout girl. but I'm pretty gifted. I can see, I can track. There are things that I do, but I don't use my energy to heal. That's not
right. Yes, I've seen you in action, and it's quite an amazing experience just to witness both of you, and it feels like a very similar energy. With you, it seems that there's just a more indigenous Native American element to it, but very similar. That's what I was picking up, and it's quite beautiful.
Well, love is the medicine. Whatever the training or whatever it's coming from, love is the medicine. And at this point in my life, I can say I'm very blessed to have had so many horrendous experiences, I've had to love myself and receive the love I've had to receive love and be love to heal. And so because of the experiences that I've had, I'm not afraid. I can move into a place of non-judgment and be love. And so that's what you're witness. I think that may be what you witnessed is,
mm-hmm.
is love in action.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Same with me, love in action. You know, and when it comes to using your own energy, that's the self-love that says I must maintain the me, so that the unity we may have a possibility of existing. Because I always say, you must be able to heal yourself enough so you can heal others. You must always be in that self-nurturing and self-loving concept, because it should be second nature to you instead of having to think about activation of love. Love mm-hmm. is a natural interreactive thing that we all have, and when we begin to block it out is when we get to spiritual diseases.
And I think my dying and the strokes were, the last year has been a little. There were some very challenging situations I was in, and it was, one of them was a heartbreak involving my own son, where I felt the pain of the collective heartbreak. And I got to go in, I got to dive into the pain, lean into it. So, it's love. Love is the medicine, and self-love is where it starts.
And love is the language of speaking with the spirit.
And love is what we're made of. I went to the other side. Andrew, you know, he may have the lingo of where it was. I went to the place of sparkles.
You want to talk about that a little bit, Grace? What was it like there?
Yeah, it's beautiful. It sparkles. It was. It sounds like a symphony, and there are no words. I feel like I'm speaking pig Latin, you know, there are no words to describe, but it's vibration, and the vibration is creation vibration, which I choose to call love, and that's the medicine, and that's what we're made of. I had some wonderful experiences of, you know, coming back and being one with everything, literally. And, you know, looking, realizing that I was just vibrating at a different density than the cement block or the, you know, or the bathtub or the tree or, I had the experience of, you know, we're vibration. We are vibration. And, and it's pretty sparkly, and there's a symphony playing out there, and we are each one note of it, one strand of it, one vibration, one song of it, and like us coming together in Shasta as a soul family, it was like, wow, a chord came together. And
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the more you tune your string or clear your string or take care of your instrument, the more we're tuning the symphony of all that is.
And
coming to Shasta was the peak of the symphony, and when the mountain offered me the contractual service to do what I did there. It came with the symphony and my crown chakra, and I've talked about this with you, Lance, privately and on the air, and with Grace also, that, you know, the entire best way to describe it is the crystal that functions as the portal for Telos was in my crown chakra, and it was what determined what layers of soul family were going to arrive at Shasta.
And very shortly after I died, I knew of Andrew, but shortly after I died, I had the experience of, which is why I call myself Grace, Love's Grace. There was a part of me that was cleared away and came and finds the crystal clusters in the earth that carry the DNA for the crystalline in our DNA, and match and finds your star or your source. And so for quite some time I would lay on the ground, and what I would call Love's Grace would move through me and dive down into the crystals in the earth, come through me, kind of upgrade my DNA up to the sparkles down, and it was just this beautiful. And so I got a DNA upgrade, and then I worked with a few clients, So I got the same stuff going. There's some really cool shit happening right now.
Well, we are kind of in the final stretch of the graduation period, if I'm not mistaken. Isn't that right?
That's correct. The fuse has been lit.
And so there will be a lot of healing that will be necessary. And I think you mentioned that during other periods of time when there have been other situations similar to this, millions and maybe billions of healers have been necessary to come in and help with the healing and clearing as the energy shifts really rapidly.
Correct. Well, rapid is an English word that's meant to limit expression, and I've talked about linguistics quite
right.
some time. It's in no time, so there's no time reference for it, and no adverbs or verbs that can even begin to describe no time.
Right.
You know, it's just one of those things after you experience. I mean, look at your experience doing recording 20 episodes there.
Oh, my God, yes. That was, I mean, it just seems like it passed in a, well, in no time at all. And, you know, I mean, this is what I expected when at the end of 2012, because we were moving into no time. You know, time was supposed to vanish, and then, you know, I didn't realize that we needed to change our thinking and belief systems, and that the timing was synchronized so that
we have to change our critical thinking language and fundamentals of our reality on the most basic foundational levels have to be redefined by people in their sovereignty and not with 95% of their free will given away by tacit consent to a system that was meant to cannibalize you.
Right. And that massive system is extremely pervasive, and it is destructive, and people just don't realize that they're being herded. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and what we can do to take steps towards liberating ourselves from the contracts and the oppressive nature of the system that's going on?
That's right. The system is more than just oppressive. It's cannibalistic.
Right.
Yeah, and you mentioned something, the contracts. That's a lot of the work I do is, essentially, it's taking complete personal responsibility for yourself. And, you know, we say that, but I don't... it's quite a task to take complete personal responsibility for your words, thoughts, and deeds in this and every lifetime, and to cancel the contracts that we've made against our highest good and our divine plan and purpose, and to keep. So when I work with somebody, it's going through the layers of contracts and tracking and doing the soul retrieval, and so to get to sovereignty.
Yep. And then understanding
and so,
the impeccability.
I mean, you start with the contracts you make with the people that you live with or your family, but then it keeps going. It's the structures, the government, the religious, the and then the off the planet, you know,
right. The
extraterrestrial, you know, that whole lineage. And then we go into the multi-universes. And so when I'm working with somebody, I'm tracking, you know, multi-dimensions, universes, and it's to find the contracts that we've made that along the line where we've given our sovereignty away, sold our soul, sold our sovereignty, and no longer have free will.
Yep. And also, I heard the word impeccability. Could someone elaborate on that, why it's so important?
This is something both Grace and I believe very much. Once you're into sovereignty, it requires the understanding of impeccability at every angle of the choices that are coming to you and how you act and react to choices.
Right. There, you know, you were...
Like to the point of when you say, I'll call you back, I have to call them back.
Right. You keep your word. And if you don't, you remake that agreement with a person and let them know. And you don't say you're going to do something and then not do it. Every time we don't exercise our will that way, and we say we're going to do something and we don't do it, our word becomes less powerful. So there's a point at which when you say you're going to do something, it literally moves the entire world.
Right.
And when you're in a position like Andrew or me, if we're not impeccable, we take it. I mean, we take a hit.
Big time.
Yeah.
When we say take a hit, it's because the universe is going to put us an impeccable challenge ahead of us.
Right. And that recurring experience is not only painful, it's quite a teaching tool to remain in impeccability.
Correct.
Andrew, you said something interesting during our interviews, and it came up today. It had to do with people. You said that during the period of shifting, I guess you didn't use the word shifting. That's what I was calling it. But during these times, there would be people on the air saying things that they really didn't mean to say. And there was an element of that today when the president apparently was recorded saying some things with the mic on, and I was reminded of what you were saying, that people are going to get caught saying what they really think on the air, and there's quite a brouhaha about it.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It sounds like things are, you know, things are heating
up. You'll also find newscasters that have come to a point in their soul where they can no longer sell that last piece. And many news reporters will air out their resignations and give their final story with truth.
Kind of like the movie Network.
Okay.
You had to be there.
I think Grace got disconnected.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Okay, we'll get her back there in a second.
Okay, all right. Well, then let's continue.
Okay.
What else could... Go ahead.
I got a question for you. I know I asked you earlier about, you know, what it was like recording all those episodes. What about afterwards, as you're going back and starting to listen to some of them? Are you finding yourself in no time again?
Yes, I am. Absolutely. And... I've had to, you know, one thing I've noticed is that as I play the video, I'm typing and stopping and typing and stopping, and I'll replay it, and I find that my listening has heard something else and typed it. So I've had to go back over and over and over to get precisely that what was said, because one word changes the entire meaning of the sentence.
And then all the layers that come beyond it.
Yes, exactly. So I'm being meticulous and impeccable about getting this right, and I'm in no time. So that's one of the reasons, I think, why I'm enjoying it so much, not just because of the information and the fact that it's going in deeper, and there are deeper layers that are being... I mean, I'm beginning to be able to pull the information without... having to listen to the recording. It's as if the information is there, and it's just all I have to do is focus on it, and I'm getting the answers or the information that I'm trying to figure out. So, yes, it's a wonderful experience, and I can sit there. I have been sitting there for as long as 4, 5, 6 hours just doing this and thinking, well, where did the day go, you know? I should take a break or eat something, but it's just too... there must be some kind of element of enjoyment about being in that space.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you experience the happiness and the laughter inside there. I mean, I did, you know, whatever I could do to hold the space and hold the no time and turn the volume up and not have it, you know, fry you on an etheric level. I mean, it was really a skill set that I have learned over many years to be able to do what it is that I do.
Well, I must say that whatever it is that you're doing, you're the best one that I've ever found. So it was just a delight and a pleasure and a fun being with you. And, I mean, it was like we were all little kids, you know, at Christmas or at a party, and just really having fun. And the information was just... astonishing. I have a feeling that these recordings are going to be quite controversial. You know,
well, I, as you've known, I've done Walking in Energy, and I've been doing these shows for going on 8, 9 months. I mean, when it comes to the information, those that are attracted to it listen to it,
right,
and can't stop.
Right.
And you've experienced it, and there'll be many, many more that come to that. And
right.
I've got Grace over here on the same phone, so if you had a question for Grace, you can go over here. We're just sharing the phone now.
Okay. All right. She's there?
Yep.
Okay. Grace, what? How many heart attacks did you have after the main near-death experience? You had a series of heart attacks after that, and then you found weaving these medicine baskets was a way to heal yourself. Is that correct?
Yeah. I had a premonition of the heart attack, and I called a longtime student of mine and a couple of other healers that I was working with at the time and asked them to hold space. And they covered me. They while I left, and so they escorted me. And then I came back, and then I had a series of strokes, which I now understand was it was a curse. I was they were trying to take me out.
right.
But I had fabulous and I didn't call a doctor. I didn't go to the doctor. I did finally go to a doctor after the fourth stroke, that somebody else got scared.
Okay.
And made me go to the hospital, and I went to the hospital. I was so excited, and my right hand, I can't talk, and my right hand and arm are curled up, and I'm scribbling and I'm babbling about we're made of love, and they wanted to take me off to the nut house. I've managed at least six times in the last year when I've started to talk about my experience. It's like, medicate that woman and lock her up. Anyway, I went to the woods. My friend and I went to live in the woods. And weaving, I was a weaver before, and after I died, I didn't know what anything was. I mean, it was like, where am I and what is this stuff? And I realized that the thing in the park, in the white mound in the ground there was a car, and that it belonged to me, and the stuff that went in it was probably mine.
Oh.
And there was a box of pine needles in it, and I'm a believer in do what you can with what you've got where you are, and nature loves courage, as Terrence McKenna has so divinely is divinely quoted. And I started weaving, and the act of weaving helped me rewire my brain and rewire my brain to get my hand to work to pick up a pine needle. And we were out in the woods, and I was picking up the things that were there, and it was this my thread of consciousness that I was reweaving and rewiring my brain. And you know, the image of, they talk about the tree of life, and you know, and there's a net of light around, and well, on my way back down, I just saw what a cluster, pardon my language, fuck mess.
Right.
What a tangled fucking mess we've woven here.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And,
well, we had a lot of help.
Yes, we did, and I contributed.
Well, yeah.
But so the work, the weaving was weaving myself, you know, weaving my strand of consciousness that is human. And untangling and reweaving, and that's the work that I do. I mean, when you're tracking, it's like we see how tangled we've gotten, we see how tangled the lineages have gotten, how tangled everything has gotten, and so that's, you know, so it's interesting to me. It's a beautiful synchronicity to me that the my own healing was weaving. And that's the imagery of, you know, the work that I'm doing is untangling and weaving. But yeah, I went to the woods. I didn't. I was completely telepathic. I knew everything. I mean, had access to all the quantum physics or whatever. And the vibration of nature is healing. I mean, it's the vibration of nature, the imprinting. It was soothing. It helped my being know how to be. Whereas when I was with people, I could feel their thoughts, their words, a wall, anything man made was painful. Mm. And it took a long time for my energy body and my nervous system and my actual soul to actually seep into my human body again, because it had I needed to reweave it.
Right.
But nature is, you know, nature's song, nature's vibration is natural. And, you know, to lay on the ground, that's healing, you know. Everybody, take your shoes off. Go outside.
Mm-hmm. Walk barefoot on the ground.
Yeah, go hug a tree.
Right, right. Well, when you were doing the healing up here, you communed with the tree, the pine tree that was facing one direction, and had the person situated so that their head was facing towards the sun, the solar energies. And then the tree was holding the space towards the feet. So I thought that was an interesting. There were several spots that were chosen, and that it turned out that was the one that you felt was the most.
Well, the tree offered to work with me. I am in. You know, whenever I'm walking, I spent a lot of time living on the land. Living, you know, I'm, you know. I grew up in the woods. I grew up where nature is, you know.
And there's
I grew up in the country.
There's a process of walking the land, and both of you have mentioned this, as have some of my other guests, talk about the need to walk the land. Would you like to share more about the purpose of that and how that helps communicate with the various elementals and spirits that are there?
Are you referring to when we mentioned for you to walk your land?
Yes.
Or,
yes.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about my experience. So I grew up, I had a childhood that most people wouldn't have lived in, and I went to the woods, and there was a creek and a tree, and the land divas and tree spirits and the earth has always helped me. And so I've been in contact and in stewardship of the earth since I was a little girl, in communication and in cooperation and co-creation. And with the all of the native mentors and teachers and lifetimes that I've had, whenever I go anywhere, I always say thank you to the land and hello and, you know, permission, hello, and find out who's there. I've kind of lost my focus here. Ask me the question again.
Okay. I was just mentioning about the idea of walking the land, and I remember Andrew had said something about doing that four times a day. And
your particular piece of land. Well, your land, I clearly, when I was there, I felt like it had been in your family for a long time. So there's a there was a calm about it. There was it's clearly been, you know, it's been in your family for a long time, you could actually have a relationship, you could call in and have a working relationship with, like, that tree. I walked out and that tree offered to help me. You know, because when I drive up to somebody's house, when I came up to your property at the gate, I introduce myself to the land. I say, hello, I'm here. And then that one thing I say is, may I have permission to enter? And is there anything I can do to help?
Wow, beautiful, beautiful.
So yeah. I had a relationship with your land as I was approaching it. I had called forward to it and said, I'm coming, may I have permission to enter and to walk with you? And is there anything I can do to help? So when we started to work with the gentleman that was there, that tree said, I'll help. And I, cause, you know, it's like, okay, thank you.
Nice. Well, you know, your sharing that is such a contrast of how out of touch many people are with the respect for and the communication with the spirit of all things, that there is a certain kind of courtesy and protocol and language that opens doors for us when we know how to use them, and that it, and it's based on respect and love, asking permission. What can I do to be of service? And, you know, knowing that everything that you're talking to is a sentient life force and that it will talk back to you. So that's so different than people living in the cities, you know, throwing trash in the streets and just feeling like everything is disconnected and has no life to it. So there's a lot for us to learn.
Yeah, I mean, I had the blessing of, you know, growing up in a time, you know, we went out the door in the morning. We didn't get helmets and life, you know, life jackets and seat belts. And if you came back at night, it meant you made it through the day. But, you know, I grew up in a creek and in a lake and, you know, in the dirt. And then I also had the great honor of, you know, working with the Apache woman. And every blade of grass on her property is to be respected.
Absolutely.
And I lived in the desert and on Anasazi land for a long time. And I remember I was there in my 20s and you know, there's rattlesnakes and scorpions and cactus and hot and mm-hmm. and I had a 20-year-old attitude, 20-year-old with a few drinks in her attitude.
Well,
and you know, I had a lot of cactus and was and then I remembered, it's like, oh, and so in the night I would close my eyes and walk in the desert and practice. You know, waiting till I could feel. It's like till I could feel the cactus, and I could talk mm-hmm. to the snakes, and I could talk. And it's like I'm here visiting them.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
I would walk in the desert in, you know, in the dark, and be able to walk through cactus and, you know, and by feel and by respect.
Well,
I'm here.
I hate to interrupt you, Grace, but we
are
at the end of the hour.
Great, I'm going to hand you to Andrew.
Okay.
Hey, Lance.
Hi. We're at the end of the hour again. It seems that we're always doing this. Is there anything that you'd like to share with us before the show ends?
Well, a simple thing. I've been talking about contract removals, and it's something that's right up Grace's alley. I encourage people to go to my website, andrewbartus.com, and look at the contract removal button, and to use your own knowledge, your own wisdom, to add to those and change those around. And Grace has some really good ones that she'd like to talk about, if we've got a minute in which you can just give a quick...
We have about 30 seconds.
Hold on one second. Go.
You know, a basic one is I cancel all contract vows and agreements I've made against myself in this and every lifetime.
It starts there.
You start right where you are. And because self-love, love is the medicine. So you cancel the contract you've made against yourself.
Wonderful. Well, listen, your links are up on my show bio, so anybody who missed them, we don't need to repeat them now. They can just go to the bio for tonight's show. And I just want to thank both of you, Andrew Bartus and Grace Francesca Oldani, for being the guests tonight. And it was an honor to have you. And many blessings.
Many blessings to you, too. And I look forward to coming back to your house and doing more healings. And so does
me,
Grace.
Too. Me, too. All right. Good night, everybody. Good night, you two.
Good night.